everyone. I'm Gary Noll. We're here to share the latest on quality, independent, scientifically validated information of how you can make better choices to overcome and prevent disease, to slow down and reverse much of the aging process. Today, chlorophyllin, curcumin, turmeric, fermented foods, and sedentary lifestyles will be the discussion. We began with a study from Sichuan University, as well as Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. An article in the American Journal of Physiology, Gastrointestinal and Liver Physiology. And what it shows is that a chlorophyll-based product is called chloro, that's C-H-L-O-R, phyllin, P-H-Y-L-L-I-N, shows promise with all forms of inflammatory bowel disease. Well, we have millions of people suffering from that, mainly because of alcohol, which is causing inflammation, lack of fiber, heavy meat consumption, cheese consumption. All that causes inflammation in the intestines, colon, and stomach. Then add in coffee, and boy, you've got a real combination of, to cause nothing but disease. What chlorophyllin is, it's a water-soluble derivative of chlorophyll, the pigment that gives green plants their color. So according to this study, quote, consuming green-colored vegetables or green pigment supplements like chlorophyllin might help people with inflammatory bowel disease. That's according to the head of that study. Now, current treatments for inflammatory bowel disease include immunosuppressant medications and surgery, both of which are associated with potentially serious adverse effects. Well, this has no adverse effects, only positive effects, and that's important. So you're looking at colitis, you're looking at diverticulitis, spastic colon. These are all part of the intestinal inflammation diseases. So something that simple could help. Now, another thing that can help is curcumin. And it shows promise as a cancer treatment without any toxic side effects. This is from Kyoto University, which is in Japan. And you already know that curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, the biologically active compound found in turmeric, that's the yellow-colored pigment from curry, well, in curry dishes, and it's shown lots of promise in clinical cancer research. A new study from Kyoto University adds more evidence that supports its use in clinical care settings. Researchers are developing a curcumin prodrug called TBP1901 that demonstrates anti-tumor effects with no adverse toxicities. Again, that's TBP1901. Now, curcumin's an appealing compound for oncology researchers, as many current pharmacological treatments lead to significant side effects in patients. Thus far, what we have is we have a lot of studies. We're talking about thousands of studies in PubMed, the National Library of Medicine's archives, of showing that curcumin helps all forms of inflammatory conditions, including cancers. This is just the latest. And curcumin increases its bioavailability over taking just regular turmeric. But it's working, and that's why I suggest that it works preventatively too, taking, let's say, 200 to 900 milligrams a day would be good for you. Now, also involving turmeric, this is the University of California at Los Angeles, published in the previous journal Anti-Cancer Research. They found how turmeric inhibits pancreatic cancer cell growth. Interesting, because I just got off the phone this weekend with a person who I've known for a long time. In fact, this person actually hired me as a junior beginning scientist at the Institute of Plant Biology, and was responsible for looking at all the work I did, going over projects, approving the project or rejecting the projects. And now that person has a very serious illness, And I thought this person had died because she had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Turns out she's still alive. And I said, let me guess. I said, you were using the good doctor's protocol. She said, that's right. And she worked. She's from a background where it's all science all the time, lab work all the time. I never knew this person to take a day off. When I would go in on a Sunday, she'd be working there all day. I never saw her do anything except work. No matter what time I went in, unless it was overnight, she was there working. I'm guessing she's in her mid-80s, and you get stage 4 pancreatic cancer when you're in your 80s, there's very little chance you're surviving. And yet here she is. She's surviving because the director of the institute had one of the best cancer therapies in the world. And he was a genius. He wrote a textbook on cancer, on guided chemotherapy. But his chemotherapy was a different type of chemotherapy. It had chemicals, therefore it was a chemotherapy, but it was not a toxic chemotherapy like adriamycin or 5-fluorouracil, et cetera. And he did it with lipids. And he was a master. He's the world's greatest clinician when it came to lipids. And so that's what she's using. And now I was very happy to hear that. And now she said in another month she'll be strong enough to make a trip, and I'm going to put her on an immune modulating protocol and get her strength and health back. But to overcome pancreatic cancer, yeah, that's not easy. In any case, in this study reported at the University of California, we all know that pancreatic cancer is one of the most deadly forms of cancer around. And most people understand, including clinicians, that the treatments currently being made available are rather futile. It's highly lethal. But a new study indicates that turmeric extract could provide a reasonable chemotherapy alternative. And researchers published this in the peer-reviewed medical journal Anti-Cancer Research, found that liposomal curcumin, let me spell that, lipo, L-I-P-O, somal, S-O-M-A-L, curcumin was able to inhibit pancreatic cancer cell proliferation in vitro, and when administered to mice 3 times a week for 4 weeks, it was able to suppress tumor growth when compared with control groups. Now, just so you understand, lysosomal curcumin is curcumin delivered by encapsulation in liposomes, or a prepared carrier with a lipid, and hence lipo means lipid, a fat carrier. And because curcumin is fat soluble and is resistant to water solubility, this liposomal vehicle increases its bioavailability, sending it through a barrier in the liver that would normally block it. The study used a dosage of 20 milligrams per kilogram of the liposomal curcumin. Or if you were an adult, that's about, for a 150-pound adult, it's about 1,300 milligrams of this per day. Now, you can buy the encapsulated lipid-based curcumin. And I always suggest take your curcumin with vitamin A, which is fat-soluble, and vitamin D3, which is fat-soluble, and vitamin E, which is fat-soluble, and with coenzyme Q10, then you get a really high degree of benefit. This was published in the journal PLOS One, PLS1, found that curcumin has the power to inhibit the growth of esophageal cancer cell lines, with other research from UCLA actually found curcumin to decrease brain tumor size by a whopping 81%. That's 3 separate studies, all with curcumin, all showing the benefit, and yet I'll bet that not an oncologist in America is going to advise that. And it's not because there's not evidence, thousands of studies and hundreds of millions of clinical experiences, especially in India, where curcumin is commonly used in Ayurvedic medicine. From the APC Microbiome Ireland and the University College Cork, an article in Molecular Psychiatry shows fermented foods and fiber can lower your stress levels. When it comes to dealing with stress, we're often told the best thing we can do, exercise, make time for our favorite activities, or try meditation or mindfulness. But the kinds of food we eat may also be an effective way of dealing with stress, according to this published article in Molecular Psychiatry. It shows that eating more fermented foods, that's your sauerkraut, miso, and tempeh, yogurt, and high-quality fiber every day for just 4 weeks had a significant effect on lowering perceived stress levels. That's good news. Also, from University of Missouri comes a study about a sedentary lifestyle and sugary diet. They generally go hand in hand. People who don't do a lot of activity generally eat and drink a lot of things that have sugar in them. It's very detrimental, especially for men. This was in the University of Missouri School of Medicine. It's the first evidence in humans that short-term lifestyle changes can disrupt the response to insulin of blood vessels. It also is the first study to show men and women react differently to these changes. Now, vascular insulin resistance is a feature of obesity and type 2 diabetes that contributes to vascular disease. And researchers examined vascular insulin resistance in these young, healthy men and women by exposing them to 10 days of reduced physical activity, cutting their step count from 10,000 to 5,000 steps per day. The participants also increased their sugary beverage intake to a lot of sugary beverages per day. The results showed that only in men did the sedentary lifestyle and high sugar intake cause the decreased insulin-stimulated leg blood flow and a drop in a proven protein, called adropin, A-D-R-O-P-A-I-N, which regulates insulin sensitivity and is an important biomarker for vascular disease. So just keep active. Get those steps up to 10,000 steps a day. If you were to walk 4 miles, you're going to get that 10,000 steps. And walk vigorously as your arms are at your right angles and you're moving your arms. Just keep making a fist and relax, fist and relax, fist and relax, because that pumps blood into the muscles as well. And from St. Louis University School of Medicine, a new article, that spearmint can significantly improve memory, concentration, and brain function. That's good news. So try an herbal tea and put dried spearmint in it. You can buy them by the bag, not expensive. And that way you're getting your spearmint each day and help your cognitive ability. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 12 minutes, almost 13 minutes into the program. I've got a lot of stuff coming up after this, so we're going to go right to it after. In fact, I'm not even going to tell you what you're going to hear. I want you to hear it. We're going to go to a clip, and then I'll describe what it is that you listen to.
My remarks today on the elephant in the room that nobody likes to talk about. That the vaccines kill more people than they save. Today, we focus almost exclusively on COVID death saves and vaccine efficacy because we were led to believe that the vaccines are perfectly safe. But this is simply not true. For example, there were 4 times as many heart attacks in the treatment group in the Pfizer 6-month trial report. That wasn't bad luck. Theirs shows heart attacks happen 71 times more often following these vaccines compared to any other vaccine. In all, 20 people died who got the drug, 14 died who got the placebo. Few people notice that. If the net all-cause mortality from the vaccines is negative, vaccines, boosters, and mandates are all nonsensical. This is the case today. Only the VAERS numbers are statistically significant, but the other numbers are troubling. Even if the vaccines had 100% protection, it still means we killed 2 people to save 1 life. 4 experts did analyses using completely different non-U.S. data sources, and all of them came up with approximately the same number of excess vaccine-related deaths, about 411 deaths per million doses. That translates into 150,000 people have died. Now, the real numbers confirm that we kill more than we save. In the most optimistic scenario, it means that 50% of the vaccinated people died and 0% of unvaccinated people died. Unless you can explain that to the American public, you cannot approve the boosters. The paper just posted yesterday on MedArchive entitled mRNA COVID-19 Vaccination and Development of CMR Confirmed pericarditis shows that the mild pericarditis risk was 1 in 1,000, and that's an overall age range from 18 to 65, mean age of 33. It is not inconsistent with what the BEARS shows. It's pretty clear that the Pfizer trial results were gained. It's statistically impossible for protocol violations to be 5 times higher in the treatment group. Why hasn't this been investigated? Maddie DeGray was 12 when she enrolled in the Pfizer Phase 3 trial for kids. Now she's paralyzed for life. It wasn't reported by it in the Pfizer results. I told Janet Woodcock there was no investigation. Please tell us why this was not, why this fraud was not investigated.
Okay, you just heard a member of the FDA Vax panel said, quote, "We are killing more people than we are saving with the shots," end quote. So why isn't that a major story within all the news media saying, let's go and investigate this, let's look at his evidence and see if he is accurate or inaccurate? And if he's accurate, how then, since the FDA and the CDC have not done the studies on young children, how can they guarantee its safety when they're putting it into the COVID mandates as well as the annual mandates for childhood immunization to get into schools? Now, here's what you may not also be aware of. I was working over the weekend doing a statistical analysis. We have coming up this week, we have the individual who told us about all of the insurance actuaries, their figures being compiled, and he has a whole team. He brought in all these PhDs and examining the statistical relevance of these figures so he would be accurate. Here is what we have learned. Several U.S. life insurance companies have recently revealed an overwhelming, unexplained increase, 40% in, quote, all-cause deaths among 18 to 49-year-olds. Now, mind you, this takes into account all the people who die normally from diseases, accidents, all causes, but your healthiest group of people in America are 18 to 49-year-olds. These are working-class people, and they shouldn't be dying beyond what would be a normal statistical range. And I looked at that. It was around 2.6 million Americans, up to 2.8 million. And so according to the figures from two large life insurance companies, One America and Lincoln National Life Insurance, deaths by all causes have increased, excluding COVID deaths. Now, deaths by all causes increased in 2021 by 40%, but they went back 5 years. So why is it that in 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20, there was no increase, including the year of COVID, 20? What happened in 2021 that made this huge jump? I mean, huge jump. How huge was it? Here are the statistics. And by the way, we also have three physician whistleblowers have just released data from the Department of Defense drawn from clinical diagnosed codes. The increases found are from 2021 compared to the five-year average from 2016 to 20. These are actual figures. These are not guesses. Increase in young people up to 50 from myocardial infarction, that's heart attacks, 269%. Miscarriages, 300%. Bell's palsy, 291%. Congenital malformations, 156%. Female infertility, 471%. Pulmonary embolisms, 467%. Neurologic abnormalities, 300%. An increase in deaths from cancers, 300%. So then you take those figures and percentages of increase over the previous 5 years of normal deaths, and you find that there's never been in American history at any point this amount of increases in these deaths. So at the very least, a person should say, wow, there's all these people dying and we don't know why. And it's a huge statistic. It's not like 1%, 40% is a huge statistic. So then you have to take the normal death on an average year, and then you have to see how many people died in 2021, and then that's your new normal. Now, around the world, These statistics also exist from insurance actuaries. It shows that the most vaccinated countries have the most deaths. The least vaccinated countries have the least death. I just want to correct one thing there. The person speaking was not an FDA panelist. It was Steve Kirsch discussing the FDA panel advisory's outcomes and why they were approving the vaccine when the vaccine had not been. You can't approve it if you don't have evidence that it works, is both protective and safe. They had neither in those young children. That's how corrupt the FDA is. In any case, we're seeing statistics that are just off the chart. Now, I'll give you an example. Here's the actual CDC data. I went directly to the CDC. And 2014 through the first year of the pandemic, before vaccines, this is total U.S. deaths from all causes. 2014, 2,626,000. 418. 2015, 2,712,630. 2016, 2,744,248. 2017, 2,813, 503. 2018, 2,839, 206. 2019, 2,855,000. 2020, 2,913,000. Okay. Now, the study results showed that across the United States, a total of 459,764 excess deaths were reported from March to December 2020, and 477,147 excess deaths were reported in 2021. Thus, 936,911 excess deaths were reported in one calendar year over 2020 and 2021, among which 765,743 excess deaths were due to COVID-19. Almost 76% and 87% of excess deaths in 20 and 2021 were reported respectively. And that shows you we have a lot of people dying, that the only thing that we can see that could have caused it was the vaccines. So understand something, that you're dealing with huge numbers of Americans have died, and we're calling this of unknown etiology, meaning we don't know really why they died. Well, then why don't you start doing autopsies? Why don't you do autopsies and coroner reports and mortician reports so that we have clarity on this? So I'm just sharing this information with you, but it clearly shows anomalies. And it clearly shows the circulatory diseases category is the most important category for excess deaths between 2020 and 2021. Notably, deaths attributed to respiratory diseases were below average during 2021 for the period of interest between week 10 and 24. And COVID is a respiratory disease and leads to acute respiratory syndrome. But now you see all these increases in heart attacks and myocarditis, which, by the way, here's what you should know, that they've lied and said that endocarditis or myocarditis is temporary and mild. It is neither. It's permanent and it's deadly. You really increase your risk of dying over a five-year period once you have myocarditis. And that seems to be happening all over the place. Just sharing some information, data. So deaths attributed to circulatory disease include strokes, heart attacks, and heart failure, including myocarditis. And look at the statistics on each of those deaths before 2021, and they're way down compared to after 2021 and during 2021. What's the difference over a five-year period? Vaccines. Now, there may be other contributing factors, but that's on no one's chart to investigate or bring up as a topic of interest. Well, I'd say this, considering that we vaccinated over 76% of the American population, and now the president just got his fifth vaccine, his third booster, and now their doctors saying that the more boosters you get, the more damage you're doing to your system. And if people think they're protecting themselves from COVID or hospitalization or death by getting all these vaccines, then why is it they have not allowed those physicians and scientists, cardiologists, and experts to come in and to debate the issue publicly? Where are the debates? Where are the people who are in the field for 30, 40, 50 years? Why aren't they being invited on to discuss these issues? Well, we're going to share one of those people with you. You probably have never heard of him. I hadn't heard of him. Looked into his background. He has a really interesting background. His name is Dr. Shoemaker. He's been practicing medicine for 45 years. In fact, for the last 2 years during COVID, he was working in emergency care on COVID. And he has some interesting things to say. So this is a mainstream orthodox, never a dispute about his background. He's got all the right credentials, board certifications. He's a physician's physician. The difference is when he saw firsthand in clinical experience what was working and saving lives and what was causing them to die earlier. So he went before Parliament in Canada and protested. What's happening to him now, based upon those protests, we'll find out when we invite him on the program. But here is Dr. Shoemaker sharing what he has found directly from his own extensive clinical experience, but also when he's reading the scientific literature of the independent science and speaking with scientists and physicians all over the world. Dr. Shoemaker.
Here today. Nice to see everyone. And it's a sunny day here in Toronto. We're in the shade from the tall buildings, but it's a beautiful sunny day, end of the afternoon on a Saturday. We have certain things to be worried about, certain things to feel good about. We feel good about being together. We feel good about knowing facts. We feel good about being able to give facts to people. We feel sad about the facts we have to give to people. The fact is, these are life-shortening injections. Everyone who gets shot after shot after shot of these COVID shots is shortening their life with each and single injection. Some people die within 2 weeks, 3 weeks. They have a rapid internal event that ends their life extremely quickly. Adolescents dying within 3 weeks of a first shot. Two shots makes it more likely to die, surprisingly, to the parents, to the doctors who got their fourth shot. Here in Canada, we have now 80 doctors between ages 20 and 55 who have died in the last 60 days. 80 doctors in Canada between the ages of 25 and 55 have died in the last 60 days. And it's only the physicians who are getting third and fourth shots who are dying suddenly. So they're a microcosm of society. Physicians are, I guess we would call us, the most malleable people on earth. We're trying to help people. We try to listen positively to events and things that were told from above us in the medical food chain. And the medical food chain says, oh, take these shots. They're safe and effective. They'll work to reduce COVID. And we really must do it for everybody's help. Well, the shots have proven to not reduce COVID. The shots, once you get your third, and certainly once you get your fourth, your immune system is so fried, is so damaged, that you get COVID more easily. So in other words, for the purpose, supposedly to help you not have COVID, it's only in the first 3 months after the shot that it marginally makes you less likely to get COVID. From the 3 month point after your first shot, you are on a slide into immune deficiency. And when you have slid into immune deficiency, you're going to have cancers more likely in your lifetime, because your immune system is responsible for keeping you from getting cancer. Yep. And you're going to get other infections, from monkeypox to hepatitis to who knows what. You are more prone to these things when you have taken three and four and perish the thought more of these COVID immune damaging injections. So this is my main message. I had to use the word sad to give you. It's sad to be foisted to take a medication. and to have it to be so damaging. And the numbers are absolutely clear-cut how damaging it is. You can tell anyone. You can tell of your friends. You can tell your non-friends. The virus shot, and by the way, the shots contain 40,000 billion mRNAs in every shot. Every shot puts 40,000 billion mRNAs in your body. You've only got 30,000 billion cells. So it's enough for every cell of your body to have this in you. And when it's in you, it induces the body's response. The body's immune response to attack this protein inside your cell is to murder the cells of your body. And if the cells that your own immune system goes back and murders are heart cells, well, then you've got myocarditis. And you're going to die in 5 years of heart failure. And if the heart, if the cells they're damaging are the cells of the base of your brain, you have a stroke 3 or 4 months later as your brain has an eruption of its vessel and you die of a stroke, or you have a terrible stroke where you can't walk anymore. These are the most toxic medical agents put into human beings in history. The pathologists have the answer. I'm not just standing up here saying this. I'm saying it because Dr. Ryan Cole, a world-famous pathology expert, has done paper after paper showing the deficiencies that are caused by this injection. Other doctors, Dr. Arne Burkhardt out of Germany, has, I don't know if something's fun with the sound or not, but I can just carry on. Dr. Arne Burkhardt has shown us how the white cells attack the fellow white cells. Your white cells attack each other and reduce your immune state. And other white cells attack the ovaries. Other white cells attack the fetus. If you're a pregnant woman who's bearing a child and you get the vaccine while you're pregnant, you have a 33% chance of having a healthy baby only. 67% of people who get the vax while pregnant lose the pregnancy. Those are real numbers. Those aren't my numbers. Those are Pfizer had even worse numbers. When Pfizer was doing their original research, they had a cohort within the group where 28 out of 29 mothers lost their babies. Pfizer's own declared data. You can read it on the CDC website if you like. They didn't mean to release it, but they did. So, if in Pfizer's own data, 28 out of 29 lost the baby, one successful pregnancy out of 29, can we be at all surprised that the general number is you're 67% likely to lose this beautiful infant you were wanting to mother and father, and you don't get to mother and father them because they're dead on arrival. They're dead before delivery. They're stillborn, and it's a tragedy beyond any words. And it gives me no pleasure to talk about this, ladies and gentlemen. It gives me no pleasure at all. But I have to do it. How are we going to save ourselves as a continent if we keep following these ridiculous dictums? And we have to save ourselves. The first thing to do, and to the wider audience out there that is not part of this group today, don't take a shot that's going to damage your immune system. Don't let your children take a shot that's going to damage their ovaries for life. As a 12-year-old, are they going to be fertile when they're 24 or 25 if they've had massive inflammation induced into their own ovaries? Because this shot was designed to cross into the ovary barrier. This shot was designed to cross into the brain barrier. This shot was designed to go everywhere. And that's why people are dying in such strange circumstances, unexplained circumstances, but the numbers are horrific. 10 to 14-year-olds die 82 times more likely if vaccinated than not. 82 to 100 times more mortality in vaccinated 10 to 14-year-olds than those who are not. We don't have the numbers for the 5 to 9-year-olds because no one's been brave enough to do the statistics. I shudder to think what they'd be if they ever did it honestly. But they were stuck doing it honestly. They did it honestly in 2020 into 2021. The only time that an exact, observable, comparable testing of children was done, and it was done by the British. And when it came out on February 22nd, and then again on May 31st, and showed that if vaccinated, 10 to 14-year-olds died 82 times more than if they were left alone. So in common sense terms, if you want your child to be 82 to 100 times more likely to die this next year, get them another COVID. COVID biogenomic shot. Get them another one. You'll be making them 82 times more likely to die. And I am accurate about that. I am not telling you something that's not true. This is the truth. Please take care of your children. Please take care of yourselves. And please never take another COVID shot. It is the only way out of this. I will switch to one other topic because I feel I must. Ivermectin was always the best drug to fight COVID. Ivermectin is fantastic. Ivermectin has kept many of the people in this crowd alive and well because they've either used it episodically or on a preventative basis, and it's been helpful to them. And they had good reason to choose it because for 12 years it was studied. For 12 years, the US military studied ivermectin. And the word was out by 2012. Whatever, it's a package of ivermectin, it's no big deal. We shouldn't have to go to a veterinarian to get a human medication. Human medication, ivermectin, is the solution. In Japan, when they used it for the first time, roughly 1 year ago, their COVID rates plummeted within 2 weeks of making ivermectin regularly available to the population. Where ivermectin is used regularly in Mexico, they emptied out their hospital wards, which were filled with COVID patients. They too plummeted massively beginning a year ago. And what? We can't learn from Japan and Mexico? Are we brain dead here in North America? To the Premier, to the Public Health Agency of Canada, to Health Canada, stop listening to the crap you're being fed from the CDC and the WHO. It's complete crap. Ivermectin is safe.
Keep in mind that Dr. Shoemaker is risking his entire career and his future by telling the truth. He is one of a handful of doctors and scientists who are coming forward and telling the truth at great risk, so they are heroes in my opinion. But there's another hero out there, and that's Claire Daly. She speaks the truth, and she has no capacity for being a part of the majority of people who just go along with everything in the European Union. And she's from Ireland, and the Irish people and the Irish government says, you go to the European Union and represent us because you're our voice. Here's just one example, just one, of her speaking truth to power.
Against this report, because while there's some good bits in it, overall it's confused and deceptive. It purports to be a call to defend multilateralism, but instead it attempts to redefine it and turn it into its opposite. Multilateralism in a multipolar world means working through genuinely inclusive bodies such as the UN on the principle of sovereign equality, where each country has a say. It means listening to the people that you disagree with. It doesn't mean groups of so-called like-minded partners forming a little gang, be it the G7 or the G20, and negotiating your own rules and then imposing them on the rest of the world. That's the opposite of multilateralism, but that's the way it's defined in this report. We should be calling instead for upholding international law, but instead this is about rules-based international order. That isn't international law. That means the rich countries making up the rules and giving everyone else orders to follow. We couldn't be more in need today of returning to genuine multilateralism, but unfortunately this isn't it. Thanks very much.
No matter what she's talking on, she is that voice of honesty. We need those voices here in the United States now. I'm shifting gears now, and I'd like your feedback on this. We have done more radio broadcasts on the environment than any radio program in American history. Thousands. This is just our latest. This is a clip. You can watch this, by the way. You can listen to it, or you can go to prn.live and then click shows, then click all shows archive, and you'll see Gary and all show notes. And today's date, you can watch the clip because it's very important. What is the clip about? Something we're not paying attention to that is a big issue. It affects everyone on the planet. Massive glacier meltdown threatens civilization. Countdown to Armageddon. That's the title of this clip. It's not long, but wow, when you see it, you'll really appreciate how serious it is and how it's impacting people. And especially when I've gone down there twice to where the hurricane hit, and I've spoken with so many people, and I didn't speak with a single person whose homes were wiped out or all their furniture gone and is out in the street now, piles, as far as you can see for miles, just 8 foot, 9 foot high piles of furniture. And now their homes all have mold. All their grass is dead. Their trees are dead. Shrubbery, this beautiful, that's been there for decades and decades. All it's seawater, soaking in seawater, kills it. And it'll be lucky to get anything surviving down there. But no one was prepared because no one thought it would happen. And I remember I was broadcasted, I was syndicated, my show was syndicated when Katrina happened down in New Orleans. For a week beforehand, I gave all these instructions of how you can rent a trailer, rent a large trailer, like a 24-foot trailer, get a hitch on your car or truck. And if you have a truck, most people have a hitch. And then look at all the things in your house that you want to save, that you need to save, that are important to you. Furniture, clothes, documents, and put all that on the trailer. Call ahead. Call at least 200 miles further north, because the storm won't be hitting there with any strength. It'll be a lot of rain, but it won't be devastation that the wind is going to bring up over the lower Ninth Ward, up over that stupid wall that they built, and they built it too short. They should have added an additional 15 foot to it. In any case, rent a place for a week so you can stay, or go to another state, or wherever you can go, and have two 55-gallon drums on the trailer filled with gas so you can go, 1,000 miles. Get out of harm's way. People didn't. They just sat and watched it. I wrote an article called Watching Katrina, where people weren't proactive. And this time, tens of thousands, and hundreds of thousands actually, were unprepared. So we're not paying attention to the glaciers. We're not paying attention to global warming. We're not paying attention to the release of all this water, raising the water coming in all across these, where almost 60 million Americans would be living. And no one seems to care. They care afterwards, and insurance is not going to pay this. Do you think your insurance is going to cover all the expenses, all your losses? No way. They'll only cover some. You'll see that when you get your check. I got a check in the mail 5 years ago, and it had nothing on it, just an amount. And so there was no note, there was no anything. So I'm thinking, I don't think it'd be a good idea to deposit this. So I called my office, and my attorney said, don't deposit, because if you deposit it, it ends your capacity to go against the insurance company. So I didn't. I returned the check and said, I reject your offer. And I'm glad I did, because I went into court. I got experts out here, and I fought the insurance company, and I won. You know, they had to make good on my damages, which were substantial, even though I had done everything I could at that point. Now, because of that, I've learned to do more things, like a generator up off the ground, a concrete wall around my water tanks and electrical, so nothing's going to happen. Other people could do it. It's not that expensive, but we're not doing anything. Here's a clip to remind you of what we're not doing. And how about this? The European Union and its country, all of its, the countries in the European Union, are now running out of diesel. They'll be out of diesel in the next 3 to 4 weeks, completely. The United States, we're down to a little over 3 weeks of diesel. Now, why should you be concerned? Because how do you think your food gets from the farm, gets those oranges from Florida and California and brings in? How do you think the wheat and soy and other products get from the farms in the Midwest down the barges? The barges can't get down the Mississippi. It's so dry in some places you can drive a truck across. And as a result, thousands upon thousands of barges are sitting there and no place to go with all kinds of food and other items that we need to make different products that we use. So you're going to see in the next 4 weeks an emptying out of shelves. My suggestion is simple. It's really this simple. Go to a store and buy case lots. And there are stores that will give you discount on case lots. Even go to your local health food store and negotiate with them. I'd like to buy 3 months worth of beans and in cases. What kind of discount? They're going to give you a discount. Most are very decent, 15, 20%, even more. Get whole grains. Get items that you can freeze. Get everything that you need so that when everything starts going out, you have food, you have water, you have what you need, so you're not going to struggle, because I promise you there are going to be people struggling. Now, I was able to go out at night and load up enough diesel that I can run my truck for the next 2 months. And they'll get back into diesel, but they have to make that a priority. How in the world did this administration get so misguided, so corrupt, that they allowed us to go down to 1 million barrels of diesel? That's 6 hours worth of diesel for an entire country. This is not like having a hurricane and suddenly for the next week or two, you're out of gasoline, but you've gone ahead and got gasoline beforehand, which reasonable people do. This is about an entire country being out of your trucks. Think of all the equipment, all of your construction equipment runs on diesel. Think of the different means of transportation that use diesel, and you're talking about a vast majority of the products we're going to be out of. And we're just not going to get it back in adequate amounts the next day. So prepare now. I'm giving you a heads up. What I'm saying is 100% accurate, 100% accurate. It's happening here. It's happening in Europe. In fact, we ship diesel over to Europe, and now we're stopping that, even trying to get some of it back. This is just a mess. When everything is about politics and keeping power instead of serving the American public, then you know what you should do at the ballot box. I don't tell people who to vote for, but I tell you, be smart. Be smart. What do we need? We need independent parties. We need a constitutional party. We need a people's party. We need a freedom party. We need a lot of different parties that other countries are wise enough to have. We don't. We have one party, corporate party, corporate vulture capitalist party with two different divisions and dumb and dumber. But these are the people who've made it, you believe that they're smarter than you. They're not. More capable than you. They're not. Or care about you. They don't. Time to wake up and realize that we are in a serious situation. I'm merely trying to make that clear and show you options, positive solutions. Now we'll go to our clip. Massive glacier meltdown threatens civilization. This is real, people. Watch it and you'll see. And count down to Armageddon. Next week, by the way, I'm going to do an entire one-hour special on why I would never buy an electric car. I don't believe in the wind power. It's everything you're hearing about greening is all fraud. The environmental movement has been completely co-opted by the likes of Al Gore and others who profit from it. But real environmentalism is looking at geothermal, wave power that don't pollute to create it and don't pollute while it's being used. And you can't say that. And I'll show you why you can't say that for either solar or your electric vehicle or wind power. Now to the clip.
Today, 500 million metric tons of ice from the polar ice sheet are lost, perhaps forever. This alarms scientists because ice sheets cover nearly one-tenth of the Earth's land and contain 75% of the planet's fresh water.
The potential melting from the big ice sheets of Greenland and Antarctica, those are really the gorillas in the woodshed if you want to talk about problems.
Bigger.
Far bigger than what we would get from a few glaciers melting. That's really a key for civilization in this century. What's going to happen to the ice sheets?
The same ominous phenomenon is taking place all over the world. The renowned snows of Mount Kilimanjaro are disappearing. The frozen currents of the Andes are drying up. And the glaciers in Montana's Glacier National Park are vanishing. This full-blown retreat of glaciers is the result of an overall warming trend across the globe. The world's oceans are heating up.
They've warmed very convincingly in the last 10 years. The climate system is changing, and it's changing at a rate that, compared to previous decades and centuries, is quite rapid.
Gary, does Jonathan Turley
clip? As the world's glaciers melt, the area of white reflective surface
are you playing
shrinks,
this today?
Replaced by earth or ocean, both dark surfaces that absorb more heat, which in turn accelerates meltdown. This is what scientists call a feedback effect. In the last three decades, one-third of all the glaciers in Glacier National Park in Montana have melted away.
Since the 70s, we've had pretty much a very rapid and full-scale disappearance of the glaciers.
Ecologist Dan Fagry has been monitoring their demise for 15 years.
Well, we use several ways of monitoring the glaciers. The first and most obvious one is that we take pictures. And these can be pictures from a point in the landscape, so you're looking at it from the side, and you can just look at the visual changes year by year.
Sequential photos taken decades apart show how specific glaciers have shrunk in size.
I can see with my own eyes how much that glacier has disappeared. And it's a little bit of a compelling and alarming kind of view, because you think about glaciers as being a steady presence on a landscape. And to see it disappearing this quickly means that we are going through some very, very dynamic times.
70% of the Earth's surface is covered by oceans. More than one quarter of the Earth's population lives within 100 miles of a coastline. In the last two decades, many of these people have witnessed alarming changes. Once home to flourishing communities, low-lying lands are being eaten away by the sea. On islands in the South Pacific, residents have been fighting the encroachment of waves, devouring their shorelines. As the climate heats up, ocean temperatures also rise, carrying us a step closer to disaster.
It's pretty certain that storms will become more intense. And this is because as water warms, the fuel for hurricanes sort of becomes higher octane. So the warmer waters will create more violent storms.
The greatest danger posed by hurricanes is from storm surges. In the United States, 90% of the people who've died in hurricanes have been killed by storm surges. When a storm surge is accompanied by a high tide, it can raise water levels 15 feet or more and reach a mile or more inland. Throughout history, inhabitants of low-lying coastal regions have developed various ways to protect themselves from storm surges. One day, in the not-so-distant future, rising temperatures could propel us toward a mega-disaster. The glaciers in Montana have vanished. The mountains in the Himalayas, the Andes, and the Alps are bare of ice. And we've lost 5% of the Greenland ice cap and 8% of the West Antarctica ice sheet. Average sea level worldwide has risen by 3 feet. Already, cataclysmic storms have battered several American cities. The loss of wetlands has made New Orleans defenseless against even the weakest storms and subject to persistent flooding. Sections of Miami have been deemed.
Okay, and you can watch the entire video. Just want to say goodbye to our WBAI audience. They're going to go to the news. We're going to continue the top of the hour on PRN.live. And I want to play a clip now that I think is important. It deals with a three-part interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. discussing Anthony Fauci and how Fauci and a group around him have been responsible for everything that's wrong that's happened. But before I do that, I just want to also mention that this really surprised me. More than 500 literary figures have signed an open letter demanding Penguin Random House shut down a book deal with Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett, and because of how she voted on Roe versus Wade. And these are supposed progressive signers claiming that while they care deeply about freedom of speech, they also believe it's important for publishers to uphold their own dedication to the First Amendment with duty of care. So what they are saying is simply, we believe in freedom of speech for us, but not for you. There's also a major effort now that has been uncovered by this administration working with Amazon to selectively destroy books, not to allow them to be printed at all. And there's movements across the United States with the so-called woke culture to destroy all forms of books they disagree with, no matter their significance historically or in a literary sense. And being an author of over 100 books and dozens of bestsellers in my field, millions upon millions of copies sold, and serious books, I take issue with the idea that you believe that someone that disagreed with you, voted against your own ideological background, should be punished by not allowing what they view as their truth to be shared by anyone. You're canceling a person, in this case a Supreme Court justice. Well, how many times in your life have you written or said something that if all of us knew what you wrote or said, we would say, how dare you? And that's the hypocrisy. And that's unfortunate. I believe in freedom of speech. And even if I disagree completely with what you're saying, I don't believe you should be censored. I believe that that is what the First Amendment exists for. Even the most egregious speech should be protected. Now, I'm not alone in that. In fact, we're going to go to that clip. We're going to go to the Jonathan, constitutional attorney Jonathan Turley clip. I'm going to change, I'll play the Robert F. Kennedy Fauci clip tomorrow. But here is one of America's most brilliant constitutional attorneys. He has a short clip here challenging that what all these writers were signing on to, censorship, they were wrong about what her position was. And this just shows how little honest scholarship is really being done today. And where are the forums that we used to have where people could debate civilly but vigorously for their cause and let the public decide if either one or neither one has anything relevant or unique to say? We don't have that today. We just have cancel culture. And boy, is there going to be a pushback on that, because the silent majority, I don't believe it's going to be silent anymore, because they see the harm that's come to them and the limitations of their rights and freedoms because of people saying, how I feel is more important than any other reality. Well, what if you're young and immature, selfish and self-absorbed, and your reality does not connect with anyone else's reality? They don't care. So this is what we're up against, censorship on all levels. And now the pushback is coming because CNN now only has 500,000 viewers to their top shows. Wow, how they've fallen. They've lost over 90% of their audience, which they deserve because everything they do is ideological and political and controlled by outside sources without any transparency as to who and what is behind all of them getting up to go out and do a media fight on the streets. They got their people and they're going to fight someone, and almost never is the truth on their side. Now we'll go to Jonathan Turley, constitutional scholar, talking about this moving. Go ahead.
Coney Barrett at her former college and alumni group at Rhodes College in Tennessee is trying to remove the Supreme Court justice from the school's Hall of Fame, all because she voted to overturn Roe v. Wade. I want to bring in Jonathan Turley, George Washington University law professor and a Fox News contributor. Nice to see you, sir, on a Monday. Hello to you. Just so our viewers know, here's part of what the petition reads. We believe that Justice Amy Coney Barrett is one of the biggest current threats to our fundamental rights, the stability of our nation, and our democracy. I don't know what the school is going to do, but they've made their view quite clear.
They did, and the petition is not just sacrimonious, it's slanderous. They cite the honor code of the school to make allegations that are clearly false. They say that Justice Barrett, in her testimony, misled the Senate about her position on Roe v. Wade, It's unbelievable to make that allegation. At the time, I wrote a column saying that Barrett gave one of the most frank and open discussions on Roe that I've seen of any contemporary justice. She rejected the notion that Roe was super precedent. She said she did not view Roe as inviolate. So if anything, she was more open about her views than any of her predecessors or contemporaries. Mm. And so this petition just makes these allegations with no evidence at all, but then accuses her of being a threat to democracy.
Yeah.
And at some point, you know, mature and civil voices have to take control of our debate. They have to be heard. But unfortunately, it's these extreme voices that are heard more often.
Yeah, but the school hasn't made a decision, right, at Rhodes College in Tennessee?
No, I expect that the school will not yield to this particular cancel campaign. At least I hope they won't. I mean, this is a justice that Rhodes College as a whole should be endlessly proud of. And you can disagree with the justice about her views, but she has written profoundly about her views of jurisprudence. And her views are shared by millions, including many of jurists.
Yeah. I got one more for you. City University of New York has a graduate, and they were bragging about her because she was on the she was the youngest lawyer to serve on Johnny Depp's legal team. And then they scrubbed the profile of the graduate. They just dropped her. I mean, what explains that?
Do you know what's extraordinary about that story is that this was a young lawyer who was a third-year associate who made the achievement of a lifetime, became one of the lead counsels, one of the most famous cases of her generation. She's an immigrant that came to this country, went through this college, ultimately went to Fordham for a law degree, and did extraordinarily well in one of the most difficult trials of the century. Any school should be proud of that record. And yet the school yielded here and actually scrubbed and got rid of this profile.
Yeah, just two things. Her name is Yerilyn Mina. She's age 29, obviously proud of the work she does. But the school said domestic violence is a serious issue. We regret any pain this article may have caused. They're taking Amber Heard's side in that, and they dropped her profile from the school. Jonathan Turley, I got some breaking news. I look forward to talking.
So the issue is this. I can disagree with Kanye West being interviewed on Tucker Carlson, not for the interview, but for what Tucker Carlson did not bring up about him, his behavior, his background, his narcissism, his egomania, and all the things that he has said that were intentionally hurtful or out and out wrong. That's a legitimate interview. When someone suggests I want to be on and it's going to be a debate, fine. But I can dislike what he had to say, at the same time say, bring on someone to debate him, and so we hear in a more rational way what his real feelings are. If he hates Jews, or does he hate some aspect of Israeli policy towards it? He can't just make general statements without being challenged, but that's his freedom to make those general statements, and he can be as wrong as he wants. I don't believe in censorship. I believe debate the people, then let the public decide whether or not the person's statements are of value or not. This whole idea of censorship is ridiculous, and it should be challenged. That's what I'm saying. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. And now, Utrecht Lead.